These large banks and these individuals control so many assets and so many deposits of the American people because they are allowed to do so because of our regulatory framework. Our regulatory framework in the post-Glass-Steagall repeal environment, which happened under Bill Clinton before Obama came into power, still exists. That's why there is so much power in these institutions. That's why these individuals get away with so much. And that's why the Obama administration has done a very poor job of changing any of that for the benefit of our country or for economic stability going forward.
Elizabeth Warren called for John Stumpf to resign and to be criminally investigated. What do you think actually will happen?
I think he will do none of those. He has not resigned. Well, he might be criminally investigated, but as we've seen, that A, hasn't happened. So that might be a very, very low probability. And if he is, remember, all the money that he has made and that Elizabeth Warren talked about that he's made during this period, and not just from this crime, but from all the multiple ones that have led to those $10 billion worth of settlements, have not only enriched him, but even the fines for them have not come out of his own pocket. He's had zero accountability, zero cost to himself personally, zero reason to resign. And the other reason for not resigning is he runs the board there. Normally, in a situation in a company where you're talking about a resignation, there's a board decision. There's an analysis of what's going on in the company. There's a recommendation to keep or get rid of a CEO. None of that's happened because he runs the board. And this is the case in other banking institutions as well.
This is
Jamie Dimon.
We're going to have to leave it there. But Noemi Prinz, thanks so much for being with us.
That's why it's very unlikely he'll resign. That's why it's very unlikely we're going to see him in cuffs or indicted.
We have to wrap up. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!
Attention, WHFR listeners. On Saturday, October the 8th, from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m., will be our ninth annual record show on the campus of Henry Ford College. If you would like to become a vendor, if you have a lot of CDs, DVDs, or other music memorabilia for sale, you are just the person we want to talk to. That's right, you can become a vendor at our ninth annual WHFR record show. All you have to do is go to our website at whfr.fm/record show, download the vendor package, then give our general manager, Susan McGraw, a call at 313-845-9842 and reserve your table today. It's easy, it's affordable, and you just might be our next vendor at our ninth annual WHFR record show.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek, station advisor here at WHFR.fm, the station making waves. This is our public affairs show where we talk about local issues, alternative views, and just ideas about how to get along better and be better people and all that. Boy, the stuff in the national news, international news is always dragging us down. But locally, hey, there's things we can do. What matters to you most is right next door, and you have a chance to be effective. That's kind of our theme today, certainly in our political season. So our first guest is in the studio today, and it's Regan Ford. So welcome to the new WHFR Journal.
Well, thank you, Jay. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you to all the listeners out there.
I'll give you a little bit of introduction. Regan is not a candidate for office. We've been interviewing a lot of local candidates for political office heading up to the November 8th election. He's a small business owner, a community activist, and in fact, as he found out at homecoming when he actually saw us do a live broadcast of the show, he didn't know this, I never told him before, that we actually use some of his opinions that are written out as essays and published a couple times a year, last couple of years, in the Press and Guide newspaper. paper. I'm not sure the Times Herald picked it up. Some of them, maybe they did. But so he has opinions about local issues because of his connections in his neighborhood and in the community as a business owner and other things too. But especially, want to say congratulations. He's the current president of the Dearborn Rotary organization.
Oh, well, thank you
so
very
that's,
much.
So that's quite an honor. Of course, you've been a member for a few years. And we'll talk about that. He originally contacted WHFR because, well, as the president, he'd like to get the word out about the activities and the nature of the organization so that they can be better service to the community and to their members, too, of course. So we'll get into that. But at first, I'd like to, why don't you give our listeners just a little bit of background here, and this follows into my question about connecting in society and being a good citizen. Give us just very briefly some of your background. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? Employment, jobs that you've had?
Well, Jay, my wife and I, we have two children. We live in Dearborn, South Dearborn. We bought our first house there 13 years ago. I'm originally from Monroe County. That's where I grew up.
Okay.
And we moved to Dearborn. My wife's from here. She graduated Edsel Ford. We loved it. I'm a small business owner. Like I said, we got married when I was 23, and you have children young, and you're trying to get a business going. So a lot of my time was, you know, taken up with trying to grow a business and grow a family. It wasn't about probably five or six years ago I started to get involved, and I found it was something I liked. My dad always told me, you're either a part of the problem or you're part of the solution.
And yeah, I've heard that.
So it's just, I really enjoy doing it. I have more time to get involved now. The business is doing good. The kids are in school. Everything's doing great. And I just like serving. I know everybody else does. That's what I like about the Rotary. You know, there's no heroes. I like to say it's ordinary people doing extraordinary things. That's my tagline. That's what I like to say about Rotary.
Well, that's quite a compliment to the Rotary, certainly, and to the members. And that's what it's all about. And, of course, Rotary has some other purposes, too, and we'll talk about that, as I said. So with that background, and you said you have a college education somewhere?
No.
Okay.
I don't.
It's fine. Don't have to.
Yeah, my family education, and that's another important point because I know we'll talk about the Rotary later, but the Rotary is real big on education. We love helping kids. It's an education town, college town, a lot of educators. We're sitting here at a college.
Of course.
And when I was growing up, my family was from the South. It just wasn't a great big importance. And I hope to have my son and my daughter be the first one in the Ford family to have a college education. That's what I've been working for. Mm-hmm. But no, I did not go to college. I went for 1 year.
Well,
and I started
something.
My business, and I dropped out because the business was doing decent.
Sure. So, well, obviously, if you can get make that connection quickly, and you can, you have the wherewithal, the either the natural skills or assistance from a good circle of friends to keep it going, then you can develop it. And certainly as your own business owner, you can sort of direct it yourself. And so you're more in control, and therefore you can reap the benefits if you're successful and continue to improve. So that's great. No, it's not required that people go to college, but you have to be, I think, fairly clever and have some basic skills and good intuition about making decisions and so on.
I tell my children, having an education is probably the best thing you can do. It really is. And don't get me wrong, my life would have probably been a lot more prosperous if I had one. I'm fortunate to have found some mild success without it, without tooting my horn. But I think everybody should have, even if you're going to be an entrepreneur, even if you're going into business for yourself, everybody should get an education. Even if it doesn't work out, then you have something to fall back on. But it's very important.
I sometimes tell people that refer to like the liberal arts part of a four-year degree, that is the history and political science and the maybe sociology, psychology, geology, science classes. They don't see it directly affecting their life. But in fact, it does affect everyone's, all those issues affect everyone's life every day. And sometime in the future, you never know when that will come in handy, to have that broad general knowledge so you don't feel cut off or in the dark when something happens in regard to one of those issues. You have a fallback knowledge that will help pull you ahead or pull you through the problem, whatever it is. So the Renaissance person idea of knowing a little bit about everything, at least as a start, you know, and then of course getting getting skills needed for a job of one sort. Well, anyway, so I would guess because of that background and especially the being a business owner, do you know that there was, well, you already said the answer to this question. It was about 5 years ago it sort of came together that you're fairly well set and going in your business and family. And mm-hmm. So let's, you know, let's get further connected and help the community and help your business in terms of service organizations like Rotary. And tell us a little bit about the your involvement first was with, I guess, your local neighborhood association.
Yeah, it's called the Southwestern Outer Drive Neighborhood Association. And it was started by a lady whose office is right next door to us, Michelle Featherston. And for a few years, it was defaulted. It wasn't around. It was unactive.
Hiatus.
Yes, it was on hiatus. So they started it probably about 5 years ago. Things in our community started to see some signs of some negative criminal activity. And, of course, the home values diminished after the recession and automakers' trouble. So, make a long story short, SODA, which is short for the Neighborhood Association, they regrouped. I was at the school. They had the meetings at where my daughter goes to elementary school, Whitmore Bowles. Mm-hmm. I was there for another reason. It might have been a PTA meeting or something. And I overheard the commotion in the gym for their meeting. And I sat down, and it turned out to be election night. And if you don't know me, I'm one of those guys. I'm a joiner, but I can't sit and do nothing. If I go to church, I can't sit in a pew. I got to go play guitar or something. I can't play the guitar, but but I have to get involved. I can't just sit there. So it was election night, and they said, "Does anybody want to run for vice president?" Nobody was raising their hand, so I thought, "Okay, I'll do it." Didn't know what I was getting myself into, but that's how it started. And then things changed a little bit. I had the opportunity to get elected as the president. I did that for 2 years, and we grew the association pretty good. We started putting. That's how I started writing articles. The original ones were about. Mm-hmm. The Neighborhood Association.
Yes, and how valuable they can be.
Yep, and the more I got involved, the more I started learning, because up until about 6 or 7 years ago, I would know the mayor's name, but I couldn't tell you any other official's name. I didn't know who was who. Once I got involved and I started looking around, we started having to work with the city, more and more issues came apparent to me, more and more needs, and it just grew from there, and that's the basis of it. That's how it started for me.
And one of those issues, maybe from your own area, was it the Save the Pools issue too?
Yeah,
you were involved with that. Yes.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
I should be truthful with that. The Save the Pools was an actual organization and I wasn't involved with that, other than, you know, I went to a few meetings one night. But that was a few fellas. I believe Ryan Woods ran that and. I was just another person on that.
One of the pools that closed, that were closed, was it in your neighborhood area though?
Yeah, it was the school at my daughter's elementary, Whitmore Bowles.
Kind of a connection there for you to get involved with that.
And that really got the community going too, that one. Oh, yeah. That they didn't like to see that.
Well, anything you can rally around for the good of the area, of course, it actually does give more potential for that same involvement on other issues, too, when people know that they can make a difference and that there's other people out there that feel the same as they do that are willing to put in some time to get that attention. I think I had one of the wristbands about Save Our Pools or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
SOP. Oh, but anyway, when you go into a pool, you come out sopping wet.
They made a difference. We didn't get to save the pool, but it made a difference, and we were hurt.
Well, they haven't closed any more pools so
That's
far
true.
In Dearborn, but
God willing,
thanks to the supplemental millages that we've done now twice, the 5-year supplemental millages to make up for the fact that even though property values have gone up, home values have gone up in the last couple of years. Thank you very much to the world. But because of Proposition A, Proposal A, Headley Amendment, the taxes are not going to, they're just going to go up incrementally. It might be another 10 years before the taxes actually reflect the property values as closely as they used to. So, you know, let's hope in another, since that was just renewed back in August, hopefully in 5 years we won't need to pay that excess, but that means probably that the regular taxes are back up. You know? I mean, the regular way of generating them. Anyway, okay, so that's great. And then one of the it was back on August 21st in the Press and Guide that you wrote that was published your editorial about politics is a dirty business, a dirty job, and as you said. And has often been said, but somebody's got to do it. And we need the very best people to get involved, just like the media, too. Oh, my goodness, journalism, don't get me started. It's very important because most people get their information that way. But you feel very strongly about the responsibilities of citizenship. And in that article, if I may, you can give me some specifics, but you certainly focus on the importance of voting.
Yeah, voting is very important, and we all know that. You know, it's no big secret. If you look at the communities, and this is probably nationwide, it's probably worldwide, if you look at the communities who are the most impoverished, need the most help, and subsequently are doing the worst, so to speak, economically with schools, it's normally the areas with the lower voter turnout. And politicians are just like you and I, you know, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, you know. So it's a very important to be heard. It's very important to vote. You got to have respect for all the candidates, the ones that lose, the ones that win. It's easy to sit on the sidelines, you know, and point and say, oh, I didn't like what that person said, or I don't like that person. It takes a real certain personality to throw your name in that, you know, put your name in the ring there, you know, throw your hand in the ring, I should say.
A lot of people feel frustrated because they really don't know much about the candidates.
Yeah.
And that may be because they don't, you know, have good sources that can introduce them to the candidates and the different perspectives. They may feel they don't have time in their life to spend the time to get that information. But what are some of the main sources for you, as an example, of information about our local candidates?
Well, I'm a little bit of a political junkie. I go to I shouldn't say all, let me retract that. I go to as many city council meetings as I can. I've been to the mayor's study sessions. I stay pretty involved. When I write the columns, I like to know what I'm talking about, you know. If all I did was write the columns and I didn't do anything else, or I didn't try to get involved, I speak with city councilors, I speak with public officials weekly. I just really try to get involved. I read the papers, I read all of them. I just stay involved. So that way, if someone wants to ask me something or I have to take action on something, I know what I'm doing.
Well, I would highly recommend, first of all, the papers. You know, the local papers, Press and Guide and the Times Herald, they do what they can, but because of the situation with trying to run a newspaper business these days, they don't have the money to even have full-time reporters, much less do any what I would call investigative reporting, which means not just rewriting press releases or the police blotter that is the summaries of the crimes that have happened locally. They actually have people that will ask questions and get perspectives and check facts. And of course, in terms of the campaigns, when was the last time a newspaper actually did an endorsement? For any local candidate, extremely rare, and I don't even expect it from the Press and Guide or Times Herald approaching November. And one of the reasons I understand is because they used to have several reporters covering various, like, education beat and the city hall beat and so on, and they would sit together and maybe compare notes about these candidates that they knew kind of off the record, but then they would be able to do endorsements with all that extra background because of their resources. Well, they don't have those resources and those connections. They don't keep up on things. And so they, you know, an endorsement from either one of them would be suspicious in my mind because they don't have really any more resources than maybe I do. I do think the Arab American News will go out there and state their endorsements. They are more like the old style papers, and they have a lot of volunteers and maybe even a few full-time paid people. They cover a lot of stories, and they try to interview all the candidates for office in a special story of their own, whereas the Press and Guide and Times Herald will maybe just use the brief statements that are made to League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, that are, it's on their website, folks. League of Women Voters, Dearborn Heights, just the first letter of those, okay, .org. And you can find out some things, but not a lot. I'm looking forward to the They're supposed to do a forum with Board of Education candidates here in Dearborn.
Oh, okay.
Candidate forum will be coming up sometime. Don't have a date yet. I'm not sure they've chosen the night, but since there's so many candidates, we can't give them their 30 minutes of fame here on WHFR Journal. So I do expect to rebroadcast that, but it'll probably be videotaped by someone too. Anyway, it's hard to find out what's going on if you don't know the candidates directly. If you don't know, of course, you have to have that background in political science. I mean, when people get elected, what can they do?
Mm-hmm.
I've had some candidates on here for city council, running for city council, challengers usually, and they're saying, I want to do this and that to the schools. And I have to remind them, even on the air, excuse me, your job actually has no legal authority over the Dearborn Public Schools.
That's right.
It just doesn't. I mean, I hate to fact check like that, but you're running for this office and you're, I want to improve the schools. Well, it's the wrong job. Not city council, run for the Board of Ed. You know, yeah. I'd say you can't do anything directly for the school. Maybe you can give them a discount on street cleaning or something, but you can't do anything directly. That's just, well. So it's a work in progress to stay involved as a citizen. And you recommend, of course, besides the voting and, of course, trying to find out how to make an intelligent vote, you recommend in your article there, of course, getting involved in any local organizations. I think you'd agree even a civic organization or a nonprofit, maybe Friends for Metro Detroit Animals,
mm-hmm.
Formerly known as Friends of Dearborn Animals. That's all good. Or League of Women Voters. In fact, their membership has really climbed. It's now, I think, approaching 100 people, which is not a lot, but they do charge $60 a year for membership. But still, I'm just saying those people get really involved, and they try to help get the word out about elections and candidates, and it's tough.
Yeah, the League of Women Voters, they do a phenomenal job. I read all their stuff, and they do a great job. And you bring up a great point, because if you want to find out about national politics, I mean, if you want to find out about Trump or Hillary, just turn the TV or the radio on, and it's everywhere. If you want to find out about the local candidates, you really got to do some work. You got to do some research, and that's one of the reasons. Now, I don't think I've ever written about a candidate by means, but that's one of the reasons I write my articles, mm-hmm. is because it's a sad situation, like you brought up with the local meeting. It's not their fault. It's just the climate. Every local mm-hmm. Media is like that. It's very hard. They don't have investigative journalism. You don't know what's going on in City Hall. I tell everybody, we could have the most honest, trustworthy administration the world has ever seen, or we could have Tammany Hall, and you and I wouldn't know it because there's nobody investigating.
Nobody
you
covering
have no
it
idea. And I'm not a journalist. I'm just trying to do my part.
Not just locally, but even the major newspapers in this area, I think we know the names, Detroit News, Free Press, and so they don't even have any full-time reporters in Lansing.
Yeah.
And that's state government. That affects the whole state, what they do up there.
It's unbelievable.
And they have some people, you know, making a drive up there every now and then if they think something's happening, or they make a phone call every now and then. But there's nobody living there, you know, like, as I say, in the hallways of power with these people on a daily basis. And to really understand them, you have to do that. I always recommend if people know that Tim Skupik has a show. Never can remember the name of it, but once a week for half an hour, and he does it up at WKAR Studios in Lansing, and it's on Channel 56 down here in Detroit. And he's done it for like 25 years, and he has the legislators there, but he's there every day reporting on what's happening in the Capitol.
That's what we need.
Yeah. It's just, but I think the nonprofits have to do it, or like at WHFR, the volunteers. love to have extra volunteers to help with the news effort here, folks, by the way. You have to take a class, but I'll get into that later. Don't worry about that. Well, just a few minutes left before our interview with Tom Bagwell, who was a Libertarian candidate for 12th District U.S., and that's going to be exciting. Get him his 30 minutes of political fame here on the Journal. The Rotary. First of all, the members, you have to be a business person, first of all?
No. The Rotary is comprised of people from the community. We have educators. We have public officials. We have business leaders, community leaders. We got nobodies like me. I mean, it's full of everybody. I mean, it's a great opportunity if you want to get involved. And the one thing, there's so many things we do. I mean, mm-hmm. I could go on and on, but since I'm at Henry Ford College, I thought it'd be appropriate to tell all of our listeners and let all the students know who may be listening that Rotary has what we call the Rotaract Club. And it's basically a Rotary Club at Henry Ford College.
Oh.
There's a president of it. His name is Cameron. I don't want to butcher his last name, but his name is Cameron.
Okay.
He's the president of the Rotaract Club, and there's all kinds of opportunities to serve, get credit for it. Matter of fact, our biggest service project, it's a service project and a fundraiser, is Santa Snaps. What it is, at the Wayne County Light Fest, if for all of you who out there who go to that, at the end of the Wayne County Light Fest, there's a building and we provide a Santa Claus. Santa comes in from the North Pole and he sits there voluntarily, and he, you know, you can get your picture taken with him. And for those who may not know, when you go to the malls and you get your picture taken with Santa, it can cost a small fortune these days. So it's just a small, we're there for over 30 days from Thanksgiving until the end of Christmas, and we have a whole elaborate set. It's very wonderful. We give you your picture frame and a nice little, you know, Merry Christmas frame or what have you.
And you're asking for donations to the projects that the Rotary helps support.
If there's a family, we've had, and this happens all the time, there's families come in and they can't afford it. You can tell they came there just to do it, and they don't know a thing. They just get their picture taken.
So it's right at the end, Chris. Can you get into the Wayne County, you know, Light Festival, Festival of Light, whatever they call it, from more than one place? I'm not sure, but
yeah,
is there just one entranceway? But anyway,
the exit's by Hype Athletics.
Okay,
and that's where the building is. It's off.
Okay.
It's off.
Sort of in Dearborn Heights area.
Yes, sir. Yep.
Okay. Right. Oh, he called me sir. Oh,
and it's a great deal. That's cute. The best it takes. It's a big project, though. It takes 8 or 9 volunteers a night for 30 days straight, and we could not do it without the students at HFC and our high school students. So, if anybody out there who wants to be a part of this, it's fun. You have your friends there. It's not hard work. You get to hang out for 4 or 5 hours. Just go to DearbornRotary.org or even email us at info@DearbornRotary.org if you want to get involved with that. And it's coming up in November. We're planning now. I can't believe it's 80 degrees out, but we're planning for Santa. So,
yeah, well, Santa will have to trim his beard down and not wear quite so much wool. Maybe he can do short red pants or something if it's really hot.
Shorts.
But you see what his knees look like finally. And well, that's very exciting. So basically, Rotary does get together for you might say membership meetings once a month.
Yeah, we actually meet weekly.
Weekly.
Yeah, weekly.
Oh my gosh.
We do it at Park Place Catering, which is on Park Street and Outer Drive in West Dearborn. It's at 11:30 a.m. Anybody who wants to come, just swing by. You can be my guest. We serve lunch. We have great speakers. The mayor spoke a few weeks back. We had Senator Morris Hood speak. Morris Hood III. And it's just a great opportunity to get involved in the community. I love the Rotary. Like I said, it's ordinary people who get to do extraordinary things. And real quick, I know we're running out of time. I was at a Rotary conference in the summer.
Oh, wow.
And
sure. Well,
it was,
of course, it's international.
Yeah, it's international.
It's actually international.
Yeah, we're just one of 1.2 million clubs on 7 continents. But anyway, they had a conference, and it was Rotary clubs from all over. I'm sitting there, and anybody that knows me, I'm just a guy that likes to help every now and then. I was sitting there with people who have won, Rotarians who have won presidential citations and medals and all sorts of things. There was a nun there who served with Mother Teresa. It was kind of surreal, you know.
St. Teresa now.
Yes, St. Teresa, absolutely. Okay. And it's just surreal that you get to be a part of that.
Yeah,
it's great.
Well, and there's so many opportunities, whether it's the Rotary, but there's so many opportunities like that in the area. Whatever people, whatever their special interest is, true, you have to make little time for it out of your other main jobs in life, you know, earning money and taking care of the family. But also, these things actually, I would say, energize the rest of your life. It's probably not an applicable metaphor, but my first semester in college, I said, I'm not going to take a job on campus, you know, to earn a little bit of money. I just want to study. I want to get really good grades. And I got like solid B's or something. And then I decided, well, I need a little extra money, you know, to do my wash regularly and so on. So the second semester, I worked at the library, and I also worked at the carpool, driving guests around from the college to the airport back and forth.
The original and, Uber.
Yeah, right. And they're trusting a college student to drive this brand new Pontiac. It was a Pontiac because I was at Oakland University near Pontiac. But because of those extra contacts and involvement, I was more focused on my studies. And so everything worked out actually better academically when I got more involved. Well, you know, just being more active.
Yeah.
You're just not in that sort of everyday routine boredom. There's these other challenges which are always going on, and you feel like you're making a contribution, and even helping at the library desk. That's a great editorial, and I don't know if they still have it on the Press and Guide website. They don't put opinions there very often, folks. Every week I check the Press and Guide opinion section on their website, and nothing there.
Yeah, I've been fortunate.
So, yeah.
It's a tough job. It's one or two people running the whole thing. They've been very good to me, and I try to get my stuff in there to keep the people, you know, abreast of what's going on. And I've really enjoyed being here, and I hope you bring me back.
We can delve into some issues more, maybe. Well, as soon as you write another editorial, then you're on top of my list. But no, I want to stay in contact with any or all community activists, people that are knowledgeable like you are and involved and have points of view that you're not afraid of sharing. We try to be fair here. We don't do any name-calling or ugly things, and
save that for social media.
That's right. Yeah, we're trying to be a little more old style and a little more objective as possible. So anyway, we've been talking for the last 25 minutes or so with Regan Ford. No relation to the Ford family, right?
Oh, I wish.
Oh boy,
I wish.
Yeah, that would have been a head start right there. but he's one of the members of the community that's really giving back and a great example of a community activist I just keep at it. That's all I can say.
Well, thank you very much. And to you yourself, I appreciate it. Was great hearing you guys at the homecoming. It's excellent what you're doing. Everybody appreciates it, and it's just keep it up.
Whatever we can do. That's what I'm saying to everybody. Whatever you're able to do, whatever you can get involved in, it all makes a difference in the big picture.
Everybody can play a part. It was like nobody's a hero. You know,
I'm wearing a button, which is actually a political button, but it's kind of ambiguous. I kind of like it for a number of reasons. It's just a question. You in?
Mm-hmm.
That's right. You involved? Right. You know, that's sort of what it means to me. If you're not part of it, then it can't get better in a way that you want it to, especially.
And whatever it is, everybody has, you know, can be a number of agendas. You can, you know, people do all kind of great things every day all over the world.
Absolutely. Well, Regan Ford, thank you very much for being on the new WHFR Journal. We'll get on in just a minute after a commentary from Jim Hightower. Oh, well, let's do Jack Lessenberry, and we'll have Tom Bagwell here in the hot seat in just about 3 minutes. So stay tuned.
I'm Jack Lessenberry. If you've been living in Michigan for a while, chances are that you've noticed a drop in the quality of services you're getting from local government. I'm not just talking about the stressed cities like Detroit or Pontiac. I'm talking about everywhere. Well, guess what? You think you're getting less? Because you are. Some of that has to do with the mentality that all taxes are bad, even when not levying them cost us more than the tax would, as is the case with the roads. But it also has to do with a flawed financing system and a now-dead insurance executive who sponsored a measure that has played havoc with government funding. I got the exact dimensions of the problem this weekend from Bill Anderson, a government and finance operations specialist for SEMCOG, otherwise known as the Southeast Michigan Council of Governments. He posted an article on SEMCOG's blog with the shocking details. Spending by all units of government has declined dramatically over the last quarter century, and especially the last 10 years, compared to the rest of the nation. We're definitely paying public servants comparatively less. We were the 13th best state for public salary levels in 1992, 20 years later, 37th. There may well have been some fat in the system, but it's clear that for a talented young administrator, government service is a lot less attractive than it was. But not all governments have suffered equally. State payrolls, for example, have increased only about half as much as the national average, but they've kept pace with inflation. However, the bottom fell out for Michigan cities, towns, and villages. They saw their total payrolls cut by one-third over a single decade from 2002 to 2012. We're not talking about inflation-adjusted dollars either. They've been providing less in the way of services because they haven't had the money to do it. Much of this was due to the Great Recession. But here's the insurmountable problem they face. To quote SEMCOG's Anderson, the concern of Michigan's local governments is that the state's financing mechanisms do not allow a recovery from the impact of the recession. This is largely because of something called the Headley Amendment, the brainchild of the late insurance executive Richard Headley. Headley was a flamboyant conservative who lost a race for governor in 1982. But 4 years earlier, he was far more successful at getting voters to adopt something called the Headley Amendment, which put severe limits on the property tax revenue collected by local governments. Some limits were, in fact, probably needed at the time. But the problem is this. Revenues fell like a rock when property values plunged during the Great Recession. But Headley puts huge restraints on the ability of government to recover those revenues once values start increasing again. What goes down doesn't go all the way back up. The result has been a disaster when it comes to services we want government to provide. The prognosis, as Anderson notes, is that unless we change the state constitution, Our ability to provide basic services are likely to continue on a path of decline compared to the rest of the nation. Good luck attracting new jobs to our state.
Jack Lessenberry is Michigan Radio's news analyst.
And we're back with more of the new WHFR Journal here on Friday, September 23rd, 2016. And in the studio is our special political guest. We're back to political interviews. Yes, we are. And we have Tom Bagwell here. Welcome to the new WHFR Journal, Tom.
Good to be with you, Jay. Thank you very much.
They'll hear you in a minute. Let's say that again.
Good to be with you, Jay. Thank you very much.
Okay, one more. The third time is a charm.
Good to be with you, Jay. Thank you very much.
Oh, boy, he really there did it go. There. Yeah, very loud, yes. You don't have to lean into the mic there. I just didn't have the button pushed over
there
here. So, you know, we're all volunteers here, except for me, and I'm, you know, a telecom instructor. I should know better, so I always tell people, do as I say, not necessarily as I do.
Right.
And there we
nice.
Go. All right.
Awesome.
So you... to segue from Regan Ford, you decided to do your civic duty by actually becoming a candidate for political office. So I think that's a big deal, and you are to be commended on that.
Thank you.
In Regan Ford's editorial, he quotes Teddy Roosevelt from 1912, who says that, you know, in this dirty world of politics and all these problems, you really shouldn't blame the politicians so much, because they're the ones that decided to get out there and be the victims of the mud and the slinging
right.
of mud and all the, you know, it's really tough.
Absolutely.
In fact, a lot of people, you know, don't want to get into that life. It's either too public or the media goes for sensational angles. But local politics, it's true that the 12th district is a district from Michigan that represents us in the U.S. House of Representatives in Washington, D.C.
That's correct.
So it's a national office, but you do have, of course, a local base right here. So first of all, just give us, two or three minutes of your background, education, employment, family, if you want to.
Absolutely. Well, I was born in Greenville, South Carolina. My dad moved up here when I was like 6 months old, got a job. And I grew up in Ann Arbor, graduated high school from Ann Arbor Pioneer. Married my ex when I was 18, when we were both 18 years old. We went to college together at Eastern Michigan. I studied political science. I have a bachelor's degree in political science from EMU. And intended to pursue grad school, but ended up going into the job market instead. And I've been politically active since I was 16 years old. I actually showed up at the booth for the Libertarian Party at the Ann Arbor Art Fair and said I wanted to join. I like the party and I like what it stands for, and I've been active since
then. How long ago
was
that?
Oh, I was a junior in high school, so about 2000, 1999, 2000.
Almost two decades ago. Oh,
I know.
My gosh.
This is my fourth time running for office.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I ran for city council in Ypsilanti twice. Once while I was still attending EMU.
Right, and then in that district area.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And then my ex and I had a condo in Ipsy Township, and I ran for and was elected to, with another libertarian, to the Ypsilanti Township Park Commission.
Oh,
and
okay.
We had the kind of the cool claim to fame that we were the only two elected officials that weren't Democrats, and we weren't Republicans either.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, you have to start somewhere, but of course, with your educational background, you probably knew the system a little bit, like, you know.
Absolutely.
How a bill becomes law, and
yep.
Maybe had to sing that rock and roll song from the kid shows
30
years
rock,
ago.
Yeah.
But whatever, I mean, you did learn a lot of the ins and outs, and that certainly helped. I know several of our local representatives, Dave Kinesic, went to U of M Dearborn. He's a Democrat. Sorry to mention that, but
it's all right.
Okay. Well, so we have to bring up next, of course, the question. You did learn about the Libertarian Party and sort of choose to be a Libertarian since a couple decades ago. How did that happen? Libertarian Party is, for those folks that don't know, it is the third largest in membership of
That's
political
correct.
Parties in the United States. They will be, and this is not a plug, folks, it's just the fact, so you're aware, that they're on all 50 state ballots for
correct.
President.
The presidential candidates on all
That's
50
right.
states.
And I think Green Party maybe is about 40-some, but, I mean, technically, Green Party candidate for president could win. They're on enough states that if there's enough votes, they could, you know... technically win, but certainly Gary Johnson and William Weld, the vice presidential candidate, along with Johnson, the presidential candidate, are on all 50 state ballots. So then those are choices in Michigan. Yep. There's four choices, although I'm always surprised because I check at the last minute, and once every 4 years I find a party on the Michigan ballot that I've never heard of before.
Yep. There will actually be six presidential candidates.
Will there
on the
be
ballot.
Six? Okay.
The Natural Law Party
Natural
only
Law.
Exists
They're the ones.
In Michigan.
Okay, yeah.
They used to be a national party. They only mm-hmm. exist in Michigan.
Oh, my goodness.
And the Libertarian Party, Green Party, and, of course, the Democrats and Republicans.
Right.
And there's a party called the Working Class Party that just got ballot access in Michigan only.
Okay. I've heard of them. Somewhere in the news, there's some state other than Michigan that somebody said that they were voting Working Class mm-hmm. Party, whatever that is. But the point is, it's hard to find out about these things. I mean, I try to spend some time digging and making phone calls and can't do that. But certain Libertarians Party is certainly very well organized, as befits the third largest party in the United States, and the idea is to win elections.
Yes.
The Green Party wants to win elections, but they also do a lot of protesting. I mean, marches and demonstrations and, you know, day-to-day stuff that most political parties wouldn't get directly involved in. So anyway, so what impressed you about the Libertarian Party?
Well, I like the idea of the non-aggression principle. The non-aggression principle says that it is unethical, immoral to initiate force by one individual against another individual or group of individuals. And we would apply that across the board. That would also apply to government, that it is wrong for not only individuals to use force against each other, but it's wrong for government to use force against individuals or groups of individuals in society.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very appealing. And when we look at the non-aggression principle, I find that it calls out to the basic stuff that we learned in kindergarten. Don't hit people and don't take their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And that if we could abide by this principle, and obviously there's going to be some nuances there with how we organize society, but if we could just get society to go back to this basic principle of don't initiate force against each other, we could have a more peaceful and more prosperous society.
Maybe we focus people more specifically. We could go down all the issues, and we only have about 20 minutes left.
Sure.
But any political heroes, any libertarians especially that you admire?
My short list would probably be Thomas Jefferson, Ron Paul, Ayn Rand, the philosopher Robert Nozick. He wrote an influential book called Anarchy, State, and Utopia that talks about the idea of the night watchman state. And also philosophically, Lysander Spooner is more of a libertarian anarchist type hero.
Hmm.
And so I look at those kinds of people to get inspiration and, you know, especially more recently with, of course, Dr. Paul.
By the way, just to be fair, and not putting words in your mouth here, but anarchy technically is just the absence of government. Doesn't mean chaos.
That is correct. It is the absence of the state.
Right. And whether or not we can get along without government is, or how much we can get along with less government is one of those questions that the Libertarian Party is very concerned about.
Absolutely.
I guess we could shift to some topics. I'm very aware that taxation and tax reform mm-hmm. is one of the major national topics. And if you were a representative to Washington, then you would probably give some, if not all, your time. And other than at the outset, you talked about non-aggression. And so
yes.
Our military situation internationally is so aggressive, so assertive. And this
Absolutely.
Is my opinion. And if I didn't say it this hour, any opinions expressed by Regan Ford and yours truly and Tom Bagwell are not necessarily opinions of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College. But we thank them for allowing us to speak them as fairly as we can. So certainly, all of the aggressiveness, I think, has fostered more terrorism, it's my opinion, than less. And I know Gary Johnson has spoken about this. Ron Paul, one of
Absolutely.
My personal heroes, was very well received when he was trying to run for the Republican presidency 4 years ago, and when he was in the primaries here in Dearborn. Mm-hmm. What a turnout for him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Might have been bigger than Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders had a huge turnout here, too.
Yeah.
And you say, well, they're totally different. But what they have in common is they want peace in the world,
absolutely.
And especially in the Middle East, considering the connections with Dearborn residents in the Middle
absolutely.
East. But there's only so much that violence and even drone strikes can do. But taxation. Are you aware of? What are you going to do with about federal taxes? There is a plan called the Fair Tax.
Correct. Gary Johnson and Bill Weld are promoting the fair tax. I tend to not think of that as ideal, but it's one thing that we can put on the discussion table. My I like to tell people that I believe taxation is theft. That is the violent expropriation of your private property through force. Now, as long as we have a government, we have to raise revenue for the government to do at least some minimal operation. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what the debate is going to be in the end, is how much government is enough government, and where does that money come from? I've proposed eliminating the federal income tax by...
Repealing the 14th Amendment.
There'll be the 16th Amendment.
16th,
Repealing the 16th Amendment. And my plan would call for a 14% income tax, flat tax, and we would reduce that by 2% over the course of a 7-year period. And at the same time, during that period, we would have discussions about what the proper role of government is and what we would cut and how we would spend our money.
Things had to be phased in. Certainly the fair tax talks about initially adding a national sales tax to all purchases and also, but therefore stopping the withholding taxes. So
correct.
A lot of people are in the habit now of not even realizing that maybe as much as a third of their paycheck each week is actually going to the federal government as this withholding.
Absolutely.
And so they've learned to live with less.
Absolutely.
But if you had that extra one third and then you pay a sales tax, and they're estimating maybe 22% or something on every kind of purchase, except used things. So like used car, you don't have to pay taxes again.
Correct. Only
new used
goods.
House, no, only new stuff.
Yep, only new goods. And Neil Bortz, in his original book on the fair tax, proposed a 23% rate, and that was, you know, a few years back, but he said that would be, you know, revenue neutral.
I've had guests on the show here speaking from those that advocate Michigan fair tax. In other words, instead of the way we raise money for Michigan government, get rid of the income tax and go to a small, would actually, I think it'll only be 6 or 7% sales tax instead of the current. No, we have 6 right now. It'd be like 8 or 9.
Yeah, raise it a couple percent.
You wouldn't have any withholding to the state government, and in fact, people don't realize that sales taxes are the most stable in good and poor economic times. People still have to buy things.
Yeah, people still have to buy goods and services,
and even illegal immigrants. Although I don't think there's really that many, but they have to buy stuff, and so they're paying it too. So nobody sort of avoids it. Although I had Mayor O'Reilly on the show in February, and he was commenting that everything would go black market then. And I don't think so. Canada has a national excise tax, and they don't have a black market. So
I don't see a black market involved with that. Really,
but you're very right, and that is it has to be a phased process. But you know, whether it's 76,000 pages of tax code.
Oh yeah,
not 76 folks, 76,000 pages, and there's so many individual little giveaways and benefits here, there, everywhere. It's nobody can really understand it. I mean, even as a person with 2 master's degrees, I hate it when I have to go and do my own taxes.
Yeah, it's a pain.
I pity everybody else because I try to get all the deductions that are legal for me. And what about the people that don't have the knowledge or the time and can't hire an accountant or whatever? It's just wrong in our society. It's a wrong way to raise that money, and it has to be phased in. There's no doubt about that. But it's something to work for. And
And I just think about whether we do the fair tax or whether we do my plan, which is the flat tax, and then phase out the income taxes. Mm-hmm. Think about how much bureaucracy you're going to get rid of when you get rid of the IRS and all the administration that comes with that.
Exactly. All the savings there. And you might say, well, you're putting all those tax accountants out of business. I actually know that the National Association for Tax Accountants are in favor of this. Why? Because they feel that their training should go directly to helping business people run their business efficiently, not play with the tax code.
Absolutely.
You know, it's a waste of time after the fact to try to, you know, get a benefit here or there and go through 76,000 pages of documents that they can be a more benefit to the businesses up front and continuously rather than just at tax time. It's a very interesting spin on that. What about, again, education, always important. As a libertarian in Congress, you're going to get rid of the Department of Education? Or
I would propose getting rid of the Department of Education. Now, I say this with the knowledge in mind that the foundation of every society is the education of its youth. But where is the constitutional authority for the federal government to be involved in education? I think we should empower local state and local governments, and perhaps even, dare I say, a privatized free market for education. And I think that there's really, constitutionally and also practically, there's very little role for the federal government to play. I would eliminate the Department of Education. I would probably phase out the student loan program. One thing I would do for people suffering from student loan debt, which may be controversial, say, as a libertarian.
Well, that's
a
current problem. It's a massive, crushing debt.
I have student loan debt myself.
Right, you know about it, yeah.
I would allow for people struggling with student loan debt to be able to discharge those federal student loans in bankruptcy if we could do that. It's just one thing to provide some relief for that.
Yeah, I mean, there was just a report that came out, I think from Ann Arbor, someone in Ann Arbor, that over the last 10 years or so, that college tuitions nationwide have doubled.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
Doubled. And it's just becoming very difficult. I mean, if education is so important, why can't it be free? Why can't it be a government resource? Well, that's the control thing. I mean, I've seen it happen here. If we get even just and we only get a little federal aid at Henry Ford right. Community College. We do get federal aid, but oh, are there strings attached?
Absolutely.
And there's some of the craziest and most time-consuming. We have to hire extra people to pluck all the strings, in other words, to cross all the T's and dot all the I's and all the documents and all the paperwork. And that may be essential. Maybe the outcome is worth it. But it seems, one of my favorite writers, of course, was the naive Henry David Thoreau.
Correct.
In the 19th century. Simplify, simplify, simplify.
Yeah.
You know, there has to be a simpler, more direct way to do it that is going to be more beneficial for everyone.
Right. And I mean, that's why as libertarians, you know, we support free market innovations. We want, first of all, government is force. We don't like force. We don't like the initiation of force. But also just to, as a simple fact, you should be able to choose from many options what's the best way to get your education or get your kids educated. And we see that when government gets involved in things, whether it be foreign wars, whether it be taxation, whether it be entitlement programs or anything like that, that things with good intentions go awry quickly. And that the outcomes aren't what we expected or aren't as good as we would like as a society.
We're talking in this half hour of the journal with Tom Bagwell. It's B-A-G-W-E-L-L, Libertarian Party candidate running for 12th District U.S. Congress. Okay. And yes, that is the district that Debbie Dingell is the current representative for us. But you've got choices, folks, and that's why here in the Journal we want you to present that. I know that for more information, certainly about Libertarian Party and its platform and so on, you can go to lp.org.
Correct.
Talk about easy.
Yep, lp.org.
And then there's links to the state of Michigan.
Yep, the Michigan website is michiganlp.org. Mm-hmm. You can also call the National Libertarian Party at 1-800-ELECT-US.
Mm-hmm. That gets straight to the point. And, of course, we'll give your website and contact information and information if you're going to be appearing anywhere and debates or whatever as we conclude. I have one big last question about a national issue. Well, it's really an international issue, the environment. So here's one of those gotcha questions. Sorry, Sarah Palin. Do you believe in climate change caused or at least influenced by humans, or let's say that can be impacted by, let's say, avoided by human action? Do you believe it's possible?
I believe that climate change is real. I'm not a climate science denier. I do believe that human activity contributes to it. I don't believe that it's entirely what drives climate change. I do believe that there's things we can do to address it. What I don't think should happen is I don't think that we should hold the proverbial gun of government to people's heads and try to come up with a one-size-fits-all solution. I think there are many things that we can do, and if we allow private individuals by repealing regulations with regard to developing alternative energy and things like that to find the solutions that best fit the marketplace and can help us, you know, have a cleaner and greener future.
Right. It's not, when you talk about climate change, and people think, well, it's just temperature and then bad weather that might be a consequence. And, of course, bad weather could be really bad for the people along the coastlines. It could be increasing sea levels over the next 50, 100 years. Mm-hmm. And some of the scientists more recently always hear these, of course, scare reports. Of course, you hear scare reports about everything these days.
Absolutely.
But some scientists actually say we've only got about 17 years to impact the world internationally to stop these more onerous effects mm-hmm. of climate change. Now, of course, keeping the environment clean, too, from pollution, that is clean air, clean water, clean food, that's a big job. I don't know if that's directly or indirectly connected with climate change, but how are you going to do that as a libertarian if you're not going to regulate on the federal level?
I believe that we should work together with state and local authorities. I think that it's a troublesome issue for us in the fact that, yes, as libertarians, we do not believe in force, and government is force. But at the same time, there are things we can do. I think one of the things, to, as a practical matter, rather than just saying up front, let's be anarchists, get rid of the government altogether, is let's look at where we can cut fraud, waste, abuse in the EPA. The EPA has a, as long as there's a commons and as long as there's a government, I guess the government does have a role to play in that environment.
Well, and you have to admit, the state of Michigan didn't do a great job in Flint. I'm not saying if the EPA was in charge of the whole country that they would have done a great job in Flint. I'm not sure they would have seen it.
Not necessarily.
But one of their officials was very concerned, but he didn't have the power to do anything early on.
That's kind of what I was getting at with the bureaucracy or the waste in the EPA. Is there's got to be better ways for these agencies and to talk to each other, to talk to the states, and to find out what's going on, and at least do something to address that. Now, whether there's an authorization to do that constitutionally at the federal level or whether they can provide support and assistance, that's another thing.
Well, and that's really the big challenge, I think, for libertarians, and that is what's appropriate for the federal government to do and must be done at the federal level. But I think there's a long list of things they could get out of. I mean, that's just my
absolutely. That's
humble opinion here. And, you know, I've said on this show, and I'm consistent here, is that I really believe in local government, state government, and federal government. And there are some things that the federal government really is the one that has to take the responsibility for. And you might say, well, national defense. Okay, yeah, but, you know, certainly not international war making. I have to qualify that.
Defense
and people
offense.
Also know on the show that I'm a pacifist, so of course I'm not going to be in favor of war or very little violence anywhere.
Right.
Well, it's quite a challenge, but you're not only a great citizen, to use Regan Ford's term, for volunteering to be a candidate, and as you've been a candidate before for other positions, but also you're out and about. You have a website, Bagwell for Liberty. That's the number four, folks.
Correct.
Bagwell, Bagwell, four, the number four, liberty.com.
Yep.
And where can people maybe see you in the next month, 6 weeks before the election?
I will be tonight. I will be at the Eastern Michigan football game. I'll be at the tailgate handing out some literature there.
Ypsilanti.
And I will, on October 13th, I will be involved in a candidate forum at sponsored by the League of Women Voters, the Ann Arbor area.
Oh, okay.
And that will be at 5:30 to 6:30 at Connor O'Neill's Pub at 318 South Main Street in Ann Arbor. It will also be broadcast live on Ann Arbor's Access TV.
It's almost impossible to go door-to-door knocking on doors in this district. I mean, I don't know how many people are in the district. It's a lot more than the 15th district, like, which is just a state district here in Dearborn. But it's all the way from, like, downriver up and around through Dearborn, avoiding Canton, apparently, and then out to Ann Arbor. And it's crazy. So, you know, it's hard to get your story out there. But I do think Libertarian Party, which is not alt-right, it's not right, it's right on some things, it's not left, it's not progressive, it's not centrist either, folks. So you know the one thing you can't do, is you shouldn't do in your thinking, whether or not you're in favor of libertarians or not, folks, is to think that it's on one side of the political spectrum or the other. There are things that progressive liberals love about the Libertarian Party platform, and there's things that conservatives of one sort or another love.
There's things that the left and right both love.
It's an amazing mixture. It's not inconsistent, though, because the basic principle is
non-aggression and individual liberty.
That's right. Yeah, and all the things that come from that. That's all about all the time we have in the journal. I'd love to go over tons more issues, but at least we didn't do a soundbite. That's always ugly, right?
Right.
Can you come up with the best, 5 seconds? And I'm not asking for that now, but I will give you Tom Bagwell, Libertarian candidate for 12th District. 1 minute. Why should people vote for you for this office in the 12th District?
Well, I would just say that, you know, this year we have a choice. And we can continue the age of the political dynasty. We can continue the age of the politics of, you know, personal privilege and special interests and banking interests and automotive interests. Or we can try something different. We can try liberty instead of government control. We can try cooperation and non-aggression instead of bombs and bribes. We can try respect for the individual rather than forced collectivism. I think it's time that we stop being represented by people that work for just the interest and somebody that works for all of us. We can shed the bonds that tie us up that are forged in paper change in Congress with legislation and repeal some laws and maybe speak some truth to power. You know, I can't do it without help. And obviously, as a libertarian, we have limited resources. But I think that, you know, whether we agree on all the issues or not, I think if we look to an outsider, somebody who doesn't have the big money people behind them or the interest behind them, somebody's just a regular Joe that has a family and works paycheck to paycheck, you know, we might be able to have more peace, prosperity, and freedom. And so I'd ask you to not only support me, but libertarians all the way down the ballot.
Great summation. Thank you very much, Tom Bagwell, for being on the Journal. And folks, please do register to vote. You still got time. I think October 7th, if that's a weekday, is the last day to register. That's very important. If you're not registered, you can't even decide to vote at the last minute. Let's say, oh, I don't want to vote for anybody. I don't know of anybody that I want to. Well, yeah, but maybe you will in the next 6 weeks. Like you go to a tailgate party with Tom Bagwell or something. Who knows? I mean, where all of a sudden there's at least one person that's, I think I'd really like to support them. Well, you can't if you're not registered. So, by the way, next Tuesday, I don't know why it was picked, but the League of Women Voters say next Tuesday is National Registration Day. Register to vote. Well, any day is good through October 7th. Absolutely. Thank you for being on the Journal. Tom, I'm just going to give people a little information about our past shows on politics and our new shows, and then we'll escort you out. Be sure to take all your WHFR swag here.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Okay. Remember that we have podcasts with local, who have done 30-minute interviews with local candidates. Back on May 27th, Gene Hunt for 19th District Judge. July 29th, Susan DeBaggia running against Hunt or looking for the same job. On July 29th, also we interviewed on the show for 30 minutes Abdullah Hamoud, who's running for 15th District Representative to Michigan. And next week, boy, it's a double barrel thing. We've got Jeff Jones, Republican, running for that 12th District. So we're going to grill him just like we did Tom Bagwell today and find out what he's all about. And also, let me check my notebook. Who else there? Oh, my gosh, last thing. Yes, Ishmael Ahmed, who is running for State Board of Education, is going to be on the show next week. I think we all know Ishmael with his connection with Access over the years. But that's it for today. Take care out there, and come on back next Friday or tell people about our podcast, WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This is WHFR Dearborn. Stay tuned for Highway 61 with Kitty Love.